Hi, I'm Mike Sklenz, and welcome to Nintendo World Report's Connectivity, Episode 3. On this week's episode, Andy, Scott, and myself open up the mailbag to field some of your questions and comments. Then, Neil joins Zach and Andy in a discussion on Mega Man, Dr. Wily's Revenge. Neil and Zach will then wrap things up with a chat about Tetris Axis and The Legend of Zelda Four Swords Anniversary Edition. After that, feel free to stick around for a nice long discussion of our favorite series, Doctor Who. As always, don't forget to email us your questions to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com.
Welcome to the Week in News on NWR Connectivity. I'm going to run through the news with you this week. My name is Andy Gergen, and with me again this week are Mr. Mike Sklenz.
Hello.
And Zachary Miller.
I have tendonitis.
Oh, God, Zach. You always have something.
Yep.
Are you in the hospital this particular week?
No, I'm just wearing a wrist brace.
Okay.
I suspect I got it through excessive masturbation.
Furious masturbation.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have much in the way for news for you tonight because it's been kind of a slow week, but we do have some listener mail, so we're going to go ahead and tie that into the news segment. In fact, this segment's going to be largely listener mail and not much news because the news this week is pretty light. But let's kick it off anyway. First story up is Resident Evil Revelations now has official release dates both for Europe, which is January 27th, and North America on February 7th. So Europe's actually getting this game first.
Those bastards.
This is a pretty big deal. This is a big third-party exclusive for the DS.
It's the reason I bought the system, honestly.
It looks gorgeous. Like, the screenshots look freaking fantastic.
Yeah, they do. They look better than Mercenaries.
Mercenaries is running on the RE4/5 kind of hybrid engine, right?
The MT framework. Okay. Yeah. And I think Revelations is running on the same thing, but I'd be shocked if they didn't improve it a little between now and then.
Sure. Why not? It looks freaking fantastic. It's apparently the story follows Jill Valentine and Chris Redfield, and they're going on some wacky adventure trying to figure out who caused the T-Vis virus outbreak.
I think the story must take place before Resident Evil 5.
Sure. I haven't played 5 yet. I played a little bit of it with Nathan online.
Yeah.
But I don't really know what happens in 5. I really liked the early Resident Evil games story-wise, but I don't remember what happens in 4. It's been so long since I've played it. I remember they went away from Umbrella very briefly, but they didn't really stick that. Like, Umbrella was back by the end of 4, I think, weren't they?
Yeah.
At least in some form. Yeah.
As a teaser.
Right. But that's all I got to say about that. I mean, we knew it was coming. We knew it was coming soon. And now we know we'll have it by the end of the next fiscal year in North America. Shortly. I mean, actually a while before the end of the next fiscal year, which is nice.
We'll have like 3 good DS games in a row. We'll have Mario Kart, Mario 3D, and then Resident Evil.
Yeah. Neil made a comment after playing some Mario Kart and Mario Land 3D in an email the other day that he's giddy about the upcoming deluge of good games on 3DS. And I just can't help but feel that, like, I don't know, I can't get giddy about games that are very, very similar spinoffs to games I've already played like 4 times.
Yeah, the only one I'm truly excited about is Luigi's Mansion 2 because it's been so long since I played that first game and I really like it.
Yep. I mean, I'll play them and I'll enjoy them, but I don't feel like tangible excitement for this. But
you like that Luigi's Mansion Jeopardy question, Mike?
I haven't heard it yet. I have yet to listen to the episode. I'm sorry.
You'll like that.
Well, we're going to go ahead and hop to these stories pretty quickly. The next story we have up is Burger Time World Tour is delayed, which is, you know, a WiiWare HD remake of the classic Burger Time game, which is not...
Didn't even know this existed. Next story. Yeah.
I'm curious about it.
They can do an HD remake on the Wii?
It looks well, yeah. This is a game that has, I think, similar roots to, like, Pac-Man Championship Edition. Like, I think it's in the same vein as those games, but this one's actually coming to Wii, whereas those games didn't. I think it looks good. The graphics on it look pretty fantastic. But it's been delayed. It's going to be coming out until... in late October, early November. Hopefully it's coming soon. I hope it has some kind of a cool multiplayer. I think it's supposed to have online multiplayer.
It's WiiWare, not 3DSware?
Yeah, this is WiiWare.
Yeah, they're gonna make a ton.
Yeah, according to the notice that we have on the website, the story, it's been delayed due to additional testing for online multiplayer, so
that's nice.
That's kind of cool that someone's supporting online multiplayer on the Wii.
I'll just get an error code.
I'm sure you will. Next story we have up is a new story about Darksiders 2 for the Wii U, which is coming out, of course, later after the Wii. I think it might even be a Wii 2 launch title.
It's a launch title, yeah.
But they've basically said nothing important. All they've said is that the Wii U version of Darksiders 2 is going to have it's going to have the visual parity with the competing consoles, which is kind of obvious, I would think.
It better be.
And it's going to have a unique control setup. So.
No.
Shocking.
What?
Shocking.
On the Wii U controller?
Yeah. This is not news. Guys, I have no idea why we're talking about this. A news story went up a few days ago about this, but this kind of feels like the most obvious thing ever said on a news podcast.
Hey, I'll bet you select your items on the touchscreen.
I bet. Well, screw news. News is boring this week, so let's go ahead and dive into some listener mail, and yes. I'll go ahead and kick this off, and we'll go forward from there. We have a letter from Wilson Robinson, and Wilson writes, "Hey there, guys. My name is Wilson Robinson. We've already covered that part. And I was a big fan of Newscast. I'm really excited to see what the future holds for NWR connectivity. My question is one that I've been curious about for a while now. Given the popularity of movie theaters, why don't we see something similar to this for games? New games could be there, and then you would get an hour or so to see what the game has to offer. It would be a great way for people to decide whether or not they want to get a game without fully investing in it. It will be especially effective for us Nintendo gamers, seeing that we don't really get free demos for retail releases. Curious on your guys' opinions. Once again, I'm very excited for NWR connectivity."
I have two quick things to say, though.
Shoot.
If I can.
Yes, you can.
They're already doing this for Uncharted.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is, when I went to PAX, I sat through many hour-long game demos and then bought the game based on those game demos and realized the games were shit. The only one I don't regret buying was the 2008 Prince of Persia remake. So that's not always a good way to tell if you're going to like the game, because the developer is going to take you on some, you know, what they think is the best part of the game.
Well, I mean, I think we can debate the merit of demos in general. I don't play a lot of demos because I generally feel like I don't want to play an hour of the game and then go buy the game and then go play that hour again.
Yeah, me too.
Like, that doesn't really appeal to me. But the idea of putting games into movie theaters is actually really interesting. Like, I don't see, considering how little business movie theaters do aside from Friday and Saturday evenings, I don't see why they don't, like, rent them out for parties. I mean, how awesome would it be to play a four-player split-screen Halo in a movie theater?
Or maybe I've done
even
that.
Network two or three theaters together and have, like, you know, a party across
Cinema
two or three
Land
theaters.
Party.
Back when I was in college, at Florida State, we have like a giant movie theater. It's like a 400-seat stadium movie theater. It's like a legit movie theater. And it was in a building called the Student Life Center, and we had like a cyber cafe in there too. So at the time I was heading, we had like a little gaming committee, and I was heading that up and like putting together tournaments and doing that kind of stuff. And we would always do like, we're in a building with a movie theater that we have access to a really nice digital projector. So we would always play video games in the movie theater, and Smash Brothers on like a movie theater screen is freaking brilliant.
That seems like a
great
idea.
When you are as tall as Link in Smash Brothers, that's pretty cool.
It seems like a no brainer. Like, charge $40 an hour and do it for birthday parties. Like,
yeah.
I feel like movie theaters are wasting the opportunity. Like, I don't know why I don't see this kind of thing happening a lot. I don't know.
You could also sit and watch Metal Gear Solid 4.
Yeah, but that's not a good idea. The problem with that idea is that it's a really shitty idea.
It's otherwise pretty solid.
Well, let's go ahead and move on to the next letter then. Hey, Zach, why don't you grab this next one?
Sure. Okay. This letter is from Alex. What up, Alex? Alex writes, "Hey there, newscasters, or should I say connectivityers? Never mind. Remember me? Probably not. I'm the guy who sent in the winning picture for that Photoshop Zach contest, the creepy-ass picture of Nintendogs plus Zach that still gives me nightmares."
That was an awesome Photoshop job. I love that.
Horrifying, too, yeah.
Oh, good times.
Oh, yeah. We should do that again sometime. Maybe not me. I was looking around on the TalkBack thread for that episode, and I was amazed to see that I had won. Sadly, the contest was forgotten amongst all the Nintendo news, but whatever. I was happy to know that I won. A question? Oh, right. Having played Skyward Sword at multiple events, What can you say about having to calibrate the Motion Plus controller? Is it similar to Wii Sports Resort sword fighting, where you have to put it on a flat surface? That got really annoying after a while, especially when it went all funny in the middle of a match. Thanks for the great podcast. NWR Connectivity is going to be just as awesome, if not better, than the newscast. Keep up the great work. Thanks again.
That's right. I guess the problem with this question is none of us have played Skyward Sword, right?
Yeah.
That was probably more directed towards Neil, who is unfortunately not here right now. So
he never mentioned. He never brought it up, though.
I think it's worth noting that Neil did reply in the email, though. Let me pull that up. Neil replied and said, "Hey, man, we'll obviously we'll answer this full on in the show. Unfortunately, not." But he can say that he never had to deal with any calibration mid-game. He recalls there being something at the start of the playtime, but that was it. He says he thinks there is an optional menu feature to recalibrate at any time. So Neil seems to think it's not that big of a deal, but he also only played it for like short bursts. So.
And he also only ever played it like at a Nintendo event where they right. obviously would have calibrated
yeah.
it.
Yeah, that's true.
And it is a thing I worry about.
When you guys think about Skyward Sword, like based on what you know about the game so far, does like the whole Motion Plus thing even really enter your mind? Because
no.
It doesn't for me. Like
it enters my mind in that I do not have a Motion Plus controller, so therefore I'm getting a shiny gold one. But if I already had one, it wouldn't really be a thing.
I think about the visuals, and I think about like the Skyward stuff, and I think about like the little companion he's gonna have. But like honestly, I always forget about the fact that I'm gonna be playing this game standing up.
Be standing up. You just got to make sure you're swinging up and down or left and right. That seems to be the gist of it.
There are some things I think you're gonna have to like at least. Get up a little bit for like rolling.
Maybe, but you won't be playing the whole game like that.
Yeah, probably.
I hope not. It'll be like Kinect.
The more I think about it, the more I just don't want it to do that. Like, I don't want it to be a motion controlled game. The more I think about it, like at this point, 6 years after the launch of the Wii and the attempt at you know making motion controls the next big thing, I'm over it. I just want a game that controls like all the games that I've played.
You don't want the game they promised at the system's launch?
Not anymore. I might have wanted that game in 2007, but I don't care anymore.
Yeah, I really don't care about the Motion Plus, and I honestly hope it's not a huge part of the game, because if I have to sit there and think, do I have to slice left, right, up, down, you know.
Well, like the game is kind of, I think, giving you that information and like the way the enemy looks.
Oh, I'm
like
sure it is. I'm sure it is, but I don't want to have to put too much effort into playing it. I know that sounds stupid, but you know, I want to be able to sit back and kind of turn off my brain and play it.
Well, I think, you know, if you get to an enemy that, like, oh, you need to attack this enemy by going left to right, if you try and swing up and down, like, something will happen and your attack won't go through,
yeah.
And then you'll immediately realize, oh, yeah, I need to go the other direction.
Yeah, you're right. I'm with Andy, though. I'm not stoked about the Motion Plus stuff.
I just don't care. I'll probably think it's okay when I play it, but the chances of me at this point thinking that this is like a great innovation and control, that ship sailed. Long sailed. Like, I think by the time I finished playing Wii Sports Resort, it finally just kind of occurred to me that this is the only kind of game I ever want to do this on. But I don't know. I'm jaded, I guess, at this point.
Bowling. It only works for bowling.
I guess what I'm saying is I think it's very telling that most of the best first-party Wii games in the past 2-3 years have all used NES style as the control.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. That says a lot. Punch-Out, Donkey Kong, Kirby, probably more than that, Mario Wii, New Super Mario Bros. Wii, all these games, they all have, like, bits and pieces of motion control, but largely it's just mapping a button to shake the remote.
Right.
Like, that's
which
not...
Which itself is stupid.
Metroid's Other M. I mean, it had the point at the screen thing, and I've always liked the infrared controls, although they're kind of touch and go sometimes if the room is sunny. But Metroid Other M was still like a game that shoved NES style down your throat, whether you wanted it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Yeah. Anyway, we got one more letter, so Mike, why don't you go ahead and take this one?
Sure. I guess this is more of a, I guess, just a comment than a question, but. So it says, greetings. I've written in before. I'm Jesse from Kansas, who has the 10-year-old who's now 11, second-generation gamer who's more into Zelda than I am.
Which is awesome.
He was also able to meet a number of us at E3 since he was also there for our website, which I will gladly plug since he took all this time to write this giant thank you letter to us. So his website is VGTribune, TRIBUNE.com. I thought I'd write in and say that I like the new format. I enjoyed listening to the video game Jeopardy. I'm trying to get my kids more interested in the TV show, and the two of them have signed up to take the kids test tomorrow.
Nice.
I don't expect I don't expect high things. I just want to see how they handle the format. Though the young one already has delusions of grandeur, thinking of how she's explained to her friends and teacher that she'll have to miss school later this year to record a show. When you're getting ready to have listener games, I'd be interested in participating. I think I may have gotten half the questions right in your game, excluding the final Jeopardy question, of which I would have wagered zero and put in as a joke answer, who are Frick and Frack? At least, that's the first thing that came into my head, as I've never played that game maybe more than two or three times in the arcade when it was new. I look forward to the next episode, now to go through the backlog of other episodes in my library, including the three-week-old Radio Trivia and the last two Radio Free Nintendos that he has yet to listen to. Talk to you all later, and thanks for putting on the podcast.
Sir, you are welcome.
Thank you, Jesse, for listening to us before Radio Free Nintendo.
As far as the NWR Jeopardy thing went, I think it turned out really nicely, but yeah, that final Jeopardy question was insane.
That was me trolling everybody.
Yeah, that was basically Zach's way of saying F you to every single buddy on the site. You don't know dig about Primal Rage? Well, you suck at life. No, I think we're gonna do it again, and we're gonna I think clean it up a little bit.
Definitely gotta do it at least once because I missed it.
Yeah,
it'll get better every time we do it.
And we're gonna need to eventually do a listener one, and we'll probably maybe do an email contest in to see who we get on as contestants, and we'll work all that out. Maybe even have some actual prizes. But yeah, I think it's a really cool show idea, and that kind of goes along with connectivity, is that we're just going to kind of throw all kinds of different segments at the wall and see what sticks, and I think that one definitely sticks. And I guess this kind of leads just into the basic idea that, you know, clearly we're still kind of figuring this out. So if you have any really cool ideas for segments you want to hear from us, like either specific discussion topics or a cool idea like the Jeopardy idea, we're open to suggestion because we're kind of feeling this out. I mean,
yeah, come up with ideas so we don't have to.
Yeah, exactly.
Do our work for us, damn it.
I mean, we'll be doing news regularly, obviously, but on a week like this where there's not much news, it's kind of nice that we have three excellent listener mail suggestions to go through. So keep emailing us to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. And usually we accumulate listener mail for 2 to 3 weeks and then kind of blow through it all at once. So if you don't hear your letter right away, don't worry. We'll get to it. And if we don't, it's because we're horrible people and we forgot, not because we excluded it or something.
I was too busy masturbating excessively.
To Primal Rage fanfic. Ugh. God, I just got shivers. Anyway, that's all we got for news and listener mail this week. We have much more connectivity to come, though, so stay tuned.
Mega Man, Dr. Wily's Revenge. With me right now, we got Andy Gergen and Zach Miller. And let's not waste any time, and let's just start talking about this Game Boy debut of Mega Man.
The Blue Bomber Zach, minus the blue.
Almost a launch title.
Was it really?
I think it's 1990, 1991, somewhere around there. But, I mean, what this game is it's kind of like a weird composite of Mega Man 1 and 2, I guess.
Except 4.
Okay, yeah, I'm not really familiar with the future of the Mega Man Game Boy titles, but I did own this game as a kid, and I never really got anywhere past like the first 4, which are all Mega Man 1 bosses. And then after that, you basically just go through a Wily stage, and then you just do a run through of Mega Man 2 bosses, which is cool, but yeah. Yeah. It's an all right game.
And they don't even get their own stages.
Yeah, that's the kind of disappointing thing is when I was replaying this, because as I said, I had this game as a kid, but I never got past the first 4. I would beat some of them, but I never beat all of them. And what I ended up doing in this one is, thanks to save states, I was able to beat it. I ended up beating it in about, I think it took me about two and a half hours. Thank you, 3DS playtime calculator. Yeah. But I got to the second part, and I was kind of dismayed because I thought I was going to have full stages for each of the other four Robot Masters, but I did not.
You have that in the second game.
Okay. Which but even is still, far I mean, better. I won't lie. I kind of enjoyed this game. And I think part of the reason why I enjoyed it is because some of the frustrating sections were kind of wiped out by having the ability to use save states.
Okay. Yeah,
because there are parts that I remember as a kid just being like, fuck this game. But here I could just save state there, get past it, save state, then go on with the rest of the level and enjoy it.
Yeah, if it weren't for the save states, I would not have played more than 20 minutes of this game, if that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I overused them, but that's what happens.
The disappearing
when the game is
blocks
hard.
In Wily's space station are just brutally hard.
Yeah. I just love it's like whenever there's a block that's low to the spikes, I know that I have to jump up or else I'm going to get trapped there. It's just like it's instinct.
Yeah, no doubt.
They're just trying to bait me.
It controls more or less the same, but it's definitely a little bit laggy compared to the NES games.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it is something that's really, I mean, you see it in a couple other Game Boy games where, you know, the smaller screen kind of limits it. Whereas you saw Super Mario Land kind of did it by making, you know, Mario sprites super freaking tiny.
Yeah.
And in this one, it's just kind of like they make the screen smaller. So right. it's like the same size.
The camera's really zoomed in.
Yeah.
How
close
are the stages to the original Mega Man? Because I was thinking I had read somewhere that they were pretty close. They're not?
Not at all. Are they similar at all?
They're similar thematically, but that's about it.
Okay.
So it's not original content. Or it's not recycled content. It's original content with recycled themes.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it, but I'm not sure if I'm going to play all the way through it or not. Like, it takes a lot of patience to play through a Mega Man game, even with save states.
Yeah. I should tell you, Andy and Neil, you beat it, right, Neil?
Yeah.
Andy, you can only beat Wily with one of the sub weapons, and so you have to get in there with a full tank of Cutter, I think.
Yeah, I forget exactly what it was.
It's either Cutter or Electric Beam.
It's actually, I downloaded this game on my honeymoon, and so for the flight back, I was like, I don't want to get to a point where I'm like, I don't even know what to use. So I just made a mental note of what sub weapons to use for the Wily bosses.
That's what
it's pretty much, yeah, the only way you can hit his final form is with, I think it's Cut Boomerang or whatever.
Yeah. I think the same thing happened, I want to say, in the first Mega Man NES game, where you could only beat him with a certain item, and that always pissed me off when they do that.
Yeah.
Because it's your Mega Buster, for God's sake. That's what you always have.
Yeah. I mean, I think it should be like, yeah, you can use one item to help you out. Yeah. And make it a lot easier, but you should be able to beat them with, you know, the Mega Buster.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I honestly don't think there's too much more to say about this game.
No, there really isn't. Especially,
I guess.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I guess I was going to say, Zach, you've played the later Game Boy ones, right?
Yeah, I played all of them.
Yeah. How many are there in total?
I think there are four or five total.
Okay.
And they all, except for the last one, which is an original game with original enemies, they all feature the first three bosses from, like, the previous Mega Man, first four bosses from the previous Mega Man game, and then the next four bosses are from the next Mega Man game. So, for example, in Mega Man 2, Mega Man Land 2, or whatever they call it.
I think it's just Mega Man 2.
Yeah, I know it is, but to differentiate it from the NES game. The first four bosses are the Airman, you know, the four bosses from Mega Man 2 who you did not fight in the first one.
Yeah.
And then the next four bosses are four of them from Mega Man 3. So
okay.
It's kind of cool.
That's kind of cool. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too.
I mean, should we be looking forward to the later Game Boy games? Because I
assume
we'll get them sometime.
They perform so much better. And most of them are pretty easy. At least by comparison to the first one, but that's how it is with the NES Mega Man games, too.
Yeah,
so I look forward to seeing more of those Mega Man games pop up on Virtual Console, especially because I've never played them before.
Yeah, definitely. I remember I played the Japanese version of the last game, and I couldn't, and I know there's a store in there, just like in Mega Man 6 through 10. I couldn't understand a thing of what I was doing. I was like, I think I'll buy that. Oh, shit. I just wasted so much money.
All right. Well, you can get Mega Man Dr. Wily's Revenge on the 3DS Virtual Console for a bargain price of $3.99. So
yeah.
If you're interested in it, go check it out. Tetris Axes is a new Tetris game published by Nintendo and developed by Hudson.
I don't know if I'd call it new.
Yeah, new is the operative term. And Tetris Axes is, came out, and Zach is on the review. And before I sent him the review copy, I put some time into it. And this is basically just Tetris Party 3DS, for better or worse.
And there's some new modes, but none of the like bonus modes are all that great.
Yeah, I mean the AR modes are just shit. Like,
did you send me the card, by the way?
No, you're supposed to use a card that came with the system.
Oh, okay, it's not a special card. Okay.
Yeah. But really, I mean, I tried out both of the AR modes. I was actually kind of curious. It seemed fun. They have Stage Climber and just kind of like a regular mode.
I hate but they're Stage all Climber like, so much.
But, like, in order to do Stage Climber, you need to basically be constantly pivoting around the card.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. I mean, and, like, the other mode, the basic mode wasn't really that bad. And it does have the kind of novel mechanic that, like, you will wipe out, you know, like, a line with a certain, like item in it. And then it'll tilt it. So then you'll actually have to move. But it's more, like, gradual and not as constant as Stage Climber is.
Mm.
Which I guess they're, like, novel, but it's just, like... There's better ways to use AR than the way they're used in those modes.
You know, you say novel, and that's a good jumping off point for really this whole game. all of the new modes, and none of them are, you know, very few of them are actually new. I mean, they're novel, but not always, you know, not in a good way. Like, there's that stupid mode, I forget, it's like race or something, where you're Stage Racer, and like the screen's coming up, and you just have to maneuver the block through. I mean, you're literally maneuvering one block through a maze.
I think though that's kind of cool. Like, I actually enjoyed that a lot in the first Tetris Party on WiiWare. And in this one, I do like how they added the jump mechanic, especially with the 3D. It looked pretty cool.
Yeah. But, I mean, you wouldn't spend nearly enough time on that or as much time on that as even just normal Tetris mode.
Yeah.
You know, nothing on there is as good as endless mode.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the problem.
I do like Fever. Fever's kind of cool. It's addictive.
Fever's kind of like, I guess, Tetris's take on, like, Bejeweled Blitz and all those kind of, like, those minute-long, like, you know, keep moving, get the high score kind of game. And I mean, I didn't play a lot of it, but it didn't really grab me that much. Like, it's really, I feel like Tetris is better as an endless game, whereas Bejeweled is better as a one-minute timed game.
Yeah, and then some of the... There's a jigsaw puzzle mode, which is just hilarious. You know, you actually have jigsaw pieces that you rotate around to try and match up the picture on the bottom, on the top screen. It just, or maybe bottom screen. It just makes me laugh. It's like, this is what they've been reduced to?
Yeah.
This is not even Tetris anymore.
Yeah, there's really nothing that was really that, like, that was even remotely close to just the regular game of Tetris. And I think that's the problem. When you get to something where you're like, there's 20 different modes, like, that's all well and good. But when the the best mode is something that came out 30 years ago and you're paying $30 for this, like, in all honesty, my recommendation to anyone who wants a Tetris game is just download Tetris Party on DSiWare. I believe it's $5.
Yeah. And then I'm having huge online problems that I'm going to try. I think it's my router. Aaron gave me some ideas to fix it, but I'm going to need my brother over here because I could barely use email, much less a router. So, but maybe online play is fun. Did you get to try that?
No, because my time with the game was before it came out, so the online servers weren't worn up.
Right.
And I didn't get to try download play because I don't know anyone with a 3DS nearby.
Sure.
But, I mean, I'm sure the online works fine. But
that's going to be versus mode. I've played versus against the computer against Bomberman, and that's okay, but it goes on a little long.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess, you know, I don't know. If you've never played Tetris in your life, get Tetris Party on DSiWare.
It's very true. But we actually do have a good game to talk about right
yes,
now.
Yes, very
and
good.
And that's Four Swords, the anniversary edition that came out for free on DSiWare and 3DS eShop the other week. And I know, Zach, you've played a lot more of it. You wrote a review that's posted on the site. But from my experience with it, which so far has only been – I haven't even gotten to the new stuff yet.
It's so awesome.
I've played single player throughout, you know, two of the first three levels. And, I mean, it's a little slow-paced, especially, you know, playing it by yourself. But
yeah, it is slow.
I can't wait until I can play it multiplayer with someone.
I'm going to play three-player today.
Ooh.
Going to be awesome. And but frustrating.
So what makes this so cool?
Okay, what makes it so cool is, you know, it's... I mean, we've all played Four Swords or Four Swords Adventures before. You know, it's that, but the levels are so short that it never feels like it's dragging on.
Yeah, and that was my problem with Four Swords Adventure. I actually played
me too.
This year, is that it felt like everything kind of went on for too long.
Oh, very much so. You know, the levels are short, and none of the puzzles are hard. And the whole game is just get as many rupees as you can. And I just love that. It's just such a bite-sized game. And yeah. then you beat Fatty, who's the easiest boss in the world. And and then the new stuff opens up, and my jaw just dropped. It's so cool. Can I spoil it for them? Can I at least tell them what
so.
It is?
You want to spoil it? There were news about this. If you don't care to get this spoiled, then skip to the next segment.
Yeah. Skip to the next. Okay. Do you care, Neil?
Oh, no, I know.
Okay. The first stage is Hyrule Castle from Link to the Past. All the assets are from that, but the whole level is changed around to be a big puzzle. And that's cool. The second stage is Link to the fucking – I mean, Link's Adventure. I mean, Awakening.
Link's Awakening. You don't
Link's
even know
Awakening.
What it is.
Yeah. I'm so excited.
You're so excited.
That's the – best. Like, we dropped into that stage and I squealed with glee. It was like, this is
so
the best.
So what
ever.
Like segment of Link's Awakening is it based off of?
Well, the first segment is just based on kind of random Koholint Island area. And then the second stage is a castle, is a dungeon. And the third area is Telltale Heights.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and all the music's taken from the game, too, and all the music's taken from Link to the Past, too, for that stage. And it's just so cool because everything's black and white except you and the other guy. But even your sprites change. Like, you don't look exactly like the Link from Link's Awakening, but it's a lot closer to that than, you know, Minish Cap Link.
Yeah.
So it's so awesome. And then the third stage is, of course, the original Zelda. And it's hard, man. Like,
and it seems like the visual style for that one is also cool because I've seen screenshots of that where it's like you said with Link's Awakening, where it's like the environments all look like they're ripped out of the NES game, but
right.
The links look like they're like basically
a little
like
newer.
A square peg shaped into a round hole or something.
Right, right. That's exactly right. And that game, man, that last level is friggin' hard because it's not. It has one of those. Jump mat puzzles where you hop on a mat and it hops you to another mat that hops you to another mat. And that really frustrated. That was really the only puzzle in the whole game that made me want to tear my hair out. But they throw enemies at you like crazy in that last stage. So if I was only playing with my friend Marcus, and he doesn't know how to play a Zelda game. So he was dying every 5 minutes. And every time you die, you revive, but it costs you an increasing amount of rupees. So eventually it was costing him like 500 rupees to get back to life. And we were like, we're going to end this level with like 2 rupees between the two of us. So, oh man, it's so good. And I am so shocked. I said this in the review. I am shocked that Nintendo put so much effort into a free game.
That's wonderful. In all honesty, I'm glad they did.
Yeah. And it really, you know what? I'm going to say it. It would not work as well as a internet play game. I think it really is to the game's benefit that you have, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 people sitting around a table with their DSs so that you can say, Marcus, go over here and do this, you know. Nelson, I'm over here. I don't know if you could do that with horrible voice chat, you know, and lag.
Yeah. But yeah, so Legend of Zelda Four Swords is available until February 20th, 2012. It's free. I don't know if it'll be available.
Like, yeah, I wonder about that too.
To pay for afterwards, but you know, don't dawdle. Get this now. No. It's wonderful. It's
and if
delightful.
You have it, if you have a DSi or DSi XL and or a 3DS, I mean, you can download it on each platform.
Yeah,
which I did.
Yep, because it's free.
Free, baby.
Yeah, enjoy, guys.
Hell yeah.
Welcome to our first ever bonus segment on NWR Connectivity here. Today I'm joined by Nicholas Bray.
Would you like a jelly baby?
And Carl, let's see, he phonetically spelled this out for me. Castaneda.
That's one way to say it.
Castaneda?
Castaneda? That's fine.
Castaneda?
Oof, never, none of those, nothing resembling either of those things, but close enough, and okay. Thank you for having me on my first time here on Connectivity.
Gladly.
Yeah.
And, we're here to talk about the finale of Season 6, or Series 6, depending mm-hmm. on your preference there, of Doctor Who, mm-hmm. and kind of talk about maybe the future of Doctor Who as well.
Absolutely.
So, let's start right with the finale, then. What'd you guys think? I was kind of, you know, the finales of Doctor Who are always sort of these big moments, and they're always something to look forward to, and I don't feel like I was let down by this one
sure.
bit.
I think that the fact that they decided to do half seasons this year definitely cut into the momentum a little bit. But I think, you know, that was something that was built into it from the start, and so we sort of got a mid-season finale, and then it picked up. So it was almost as if, it was as if we were getting two seasons that of a smaller size, I guess. Because of that, I feel like it lacked a little bit of the scope that we had, you know, in Series 5, which don't get me wrong, I really liked Series 6 a lot, but I think the Series 5 was just a lot stronger, a little bit more cohesive. Also, I think it had more episodes written by Stephen Moffat, so it had that to its credit. The Series 6 was really good. I enjoyed it a lot, and I think the finale, for the most part, delivered where I needed it to deliver. But it does very much feel like the second act in a three-act story.
Right, exactly. And you kind of get that. It almost does have that sort of, like, Empire Strikes Back kind of feel, you know, like where things end on sort of an uncertain note there. Nick, what were your feelings about the finale here?
I kind of agree with Carl in regards to how the mid-season break was kind of a momentum killer. But I was also surprised how the finale was only really one episode long. I was so used to the two-parter season finale that, I don't know, maybe a two-parter could have helped a little bit. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I actually agree with you. That I was surprised last week how it was sort of a standalone episode and it had nothing to do with the finale, because this, in the same way, like, I always expect those two-parters. I mean, that's always what it's been up to this point.
Also, does this mean that Amy and Rory are finished, or, like, is that it for them, or... I don't know.
You know, I think that their story still has a ways to go, so I doubt that this is the last we've seen of them, but I would not necessarily be against them not appearing as the regular companions for Series 7. You know, I like Rory and Amy a lot. I know that there are a lot of people out there who don't like them, but I really enjoy them, especially Rory. But I would be okay with the new companions for Series 7, or perhaps different companions, but characters that we're already familiar with, which, yeah, I think is a definite possibility here.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. You know, I mean, the ending of this finale, you know, the Doctor's talking about how he needs to take a step back and be less, you know, pronounced and less relevant, I suppose. So that seems to imply that he isn't going to, yeah, have this group of companions that's traveling with him constantly. I think it will go maybe, like, episode to episode. Someone will tag along. But I do know, like, outside, you know, sort of breaking the fourth wall a little bit, I know, what's her name? Karen, yes. She's, I mean, confirmed to be in the seventh series.
Yeah, I absolutely think we're going to see them again, but ultimately, their story is done.
I think so, yeah.
You know, they have, their character arc is finished. Amy has gotten over her, you know, deity worship of the Doctor, and right. Rory has really come into his own as, like, you know, he's obviously still meek in some respects, but he's definitely not the person that you meet in the 11th Hour.
No, not at all.
You know, so they both sort of had full character arcs. It would be a shame to just throw them into another series just to have them there.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. I love the actors, and I think they're great characters, but I just think that their time has sort of gone by.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Especially, and Nick, you probably don't have this in Australia. I don't know, but sort of, I don't even know what you'd call it. This opening that comes before the credit sequence of, like, the TARDIS flying through space.
Oh, I hate that.
Do you have that?
Yeah, we do.
That snippet of Amy talking.
My name is Amy Pond, and I'm traveling with the Doctor. Yeah.
Oh, you guys have, see, I hate that too.
See, I think
that does not bother me at all. I think it was more like an American thing. Don't listen to it. Yeah, it is.
Right.
It is.
That's why I'm surprised you guys have it.
Yeah, I wish I'd just cut that out.
Well, because my favorite part about, and I've only been watching Doctor Who since, like, I don't know, spring of this year. I flew through all of it and caught up, all the reboot anyway. I haven't really watched too much of the old stuff outside of, like, watching on PBS as a kid. But to me, the best part was the opening, and, like, something would happen, or, like, either something, you know, like, mysterious, or the Doctor would do something funny. And then you get that, like, beginning, like, whoosh of the theme song as it, like, kicks in, and then the TARDIS flies by. And, like, I feel like that momentum's just completely killed by this stupid, like, cold open, like, canned, like, Amy Pond speech.
Sure. Yeah, I think that perhaps, I don't know, for me it's very easy, you know, I don't watch it live. You know, I DVR it and then watch it later. So it's very, I can just fast forward through it. Doesn't really bother me. You know, but going back to what you were just saying, you know, on a brief tangent, I think what is so appealing about Doctor Who is that it encompasses every facet of nerddom, you know, like, because you can go from history to sci-fi to, like, a sweeping fantasy story, you know, from episode to episode, and so it really sort of covers all of those angles. I think that's why people are so drawn to Doctor Who.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, in episode to episode, you'll get different settings and a whole different style of episode. Really,
it's really the ultimate genre show.
Yeah,
well, it can be any genre.
Exactly. You know, it literally, you know, flips and flops from genre to genre, from episode to episode. So I mean, this season we had, the pirate episode, which I kind of thought was the weakest.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, that was probably the weakest episode.
But even the weakest episodes are usually okay.
I will say,
they're entertaining.
I will say, I thought this season was the most consistent in regards to quality of writing and episodes in general.
Mm-hmm.
I think
season 5 was maybe a little bit more consistent. It did have that two-parter with the Earth, like opening up and swallowing things, which I wasn't a big fan of. But if for the most part, I mean, the thing is though, is that I just feel like the, you know, you had, the Weeping Angels two-parter from last series. And then you also had the Big Bang, two-parter from the finale of last series. And I feel like those four episodes are so strong.
I don't know. I found those to be less, I don't know. I think I was getting a bit tired of Doctor Who by last season. And I just found the format and the pacing of the episodes was just too, I don't know, predictable or a bit boring to me or something. But much preferred this season.
I was going to say, do you think that maybe having it split up has then maybe reduced some of that fatigue?
Yeah, I think changing the structure of the season arc actually helped with that this year, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I can see that being maybe helpful. I mean, ultimately, it does make the wait for the Christmas special way easier because, I mean, it's only, what, a couple months away?
Yeah, right, it's much easier to wait now.
I was watching it with my fiance, and, you know, at the very end of the episode, you know, it popped up and said that, you know, like, Doctor Who will be back Christmas 2011, and she's like, oh, that's not so bad.
Yeah, well, then comes the, I mean, who knows when we're going to get Series 7. That's sort of the big, you know, it's sort of left unanswered that there rumors have been that we may not get a new series of Doctor Who until the tail end of 2012.
Exactly, because they want to carry it into 2013 for the 50th anniversary. But before we speculate too much about season 7, I guess we should talk about the very end of the finale here. And I guess finding out, you know, the question, of course, being the title of the show itself.
I think that was the lamest question that I could possibly think of.
Well, I don't think it's a literal question. I don't think the question is literally, what's the Doctor's name? I think it's, you know, what is the Doctor? Like, what is he believed himself to be, and how do people view him?
Right.
Yeah, I think that's where the direction that would probably go in. But the oldest question is universe...
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair statement to say. It's a little corny to be like, well, what's the question? Well, it's Doctor Who, you know? It's a little on the nose, I guess you could say.
Yeah, a little bit. But there was still something that really got me excited about, you know, Matt Smith walking back to the TARDIS. And then I forget that guy's name. It starts with a D. The
blue-head guy.
Oh, the blue head? I don't remember.
I looked it up today, and then I couldn't find it again before we started recording. It's something with a D.
I mean, he literally did wink and nod at the camera.
Basically, yeah. And I know it was cheesy, but I was still just like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, there was something about it. And, of course, the Doctor's theme, like buzzing in the background and stuff. And it was just like, yes.
Well, I'd be remiss if we didn't bring this up. I mean, the whole, you know, thrust of this series has been that in the premiere of Series 6, the Doctor dies. A future version of the Doctor, and so the whole series we've been waiting to see, how does this play out? How is he going to not die later on when we recreate the opening of the series? And so early on, I think a lot of people were expecting the Gangers to show up, the Gangers being this sort of like DNA carbon copy that you could control, like mind control, that is introduced halfway through the series. I think most people were expecting the Doctor to just use a Ganger and then somehow make it out of it. Instead, he basically did the same thing, but with the life model decoys from Marvel Comics. They're basically the same. It's basically the same idea of just, you know, a robot who looks, sounds, and basically, for the most part, is a copy of you, but it's controlled by a small crew, you know, operating the robot. And so that is the thing that we see die at the beginning of the series, not actually the Doctor. Did you guys think that was cheap?
It was a little anticlimactic, I guess, but I feel like a lot of the finales with Doctor Who, there's this big catastrophic, you know, event happening, and then there's just this quick sort of like, oh, of course, you know, this is how he got around it. You know,
wobbly timey wimey.
Exactly, yeah. Like I feel like his plan or whatever he initiates to actually, you know, solve these dilemmas is never really that impressive. It's more just sort of the ride. So I was fine with it. You know, I wasn't expecting something more complex than that.
I think...
Go ahead.
I think they pulled it off better this year because it kind of took things that you'd seen throughout the season instead of him just, like, magically doing something random and beating the day and winning the day.
I mean, the fact is they did foreshadow this. It's not as if they pulled it out of their ass kind of like they did at the end of Series 5.
Yeah.
Right, which is cool. And I guess, too, it also illustrates sort of the theme of this season, and I guess a lot of Doctor Who, is that, you know, people are willing to sacrifice to help the Doctor. I mean, you've got all these people who, this is their vessel, you know, like, this is their livelihood, and they sacrifice their robot ship thing to save the Doctor, which is a big theme, you know, people sacrificing themselves for him.
Right. Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know, I've talked about my complaints a little bit, but ultimately I thought it was a really satisfying finale. I don't, there were complaints that, like, we still don't know why the TARDIS exploded at the end of the last series. We still don't ultimately, I guess there's still a little bit of mystery left around River, because she does not know the Doctor's name yet.
Right, and she's got to figure that out.
She has to figure that out, because in her first chronological experience, or not chronological, but her first series appearance,
she knows it.
She knows his name, so that has to come somewhere down the line.
Or at least she thinks she knows his name.
Right, exactly. Clearly there's more story to be told from her perspective.
Right. And I guess moving into sort of our projections for Season 7 here, Nick and I were talking a little bit in the email thread before we did this, but I kind of feel like this next season would be the perfect ending for Matt Smith.
Oh, I agree, yeah. I think that, you know, if they're setting this up like a three-act story, then at the end of the third act it should end.
Right, that's how I feel. I mean, the whole sort of riddle that was given out, you know, by the blue guy whose name we don't know, was, you know, about the 11 falling on the fields of Talensor or something like that. And, you know, it's got to happen eventually. And it's not that I don't like Matt Smith. He's grown on me quite a bit. I like him a lot. But, you know, like, I'm ready almost for that closure. You know, I'm ready to almost see something new.
Well, I think that, you know, when Matt Smith goes, I think Stephen Moffat probably will as well. He's sort of becoming a bigger and bigger name these days. He wrote the screenplay for Tintin, and he's got his other series with Sherlock, so, which is fantastic, by the way, for those of you who haven't seen it. He and Matt Smith, they seem to be such a fantastic team that when, you know, like it's like you said, Matt Smith's a great Doctor. I'm really, really glad to see him there. I don't want him to go, but, you know, it's like they say, it's always best to go out on top.
Right, yeah. You know? Better to end it sooner than to have it drag on and mm-hmm. get worse.
So I think that, you know, at the end of the next series, I think we'll see the departures for Matt Smith and probably Stephen Moffat as well, which would lead them likely into the big 50th anniversary extravaganza thing.
Yeah, where we have the CG recreations of all the other Doctors and have the 12 Doctors.
Well, the whole thing is like, it's pretty clear that what Moffat wants to do is he wants to do a four Doctor special.
That'd be cool.
He wants to bring in, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11.
Yeah, I would love that.
But the holdout is Eccleston.
Yeah.
Is that true? He doesn't want to come back? I mean, I knew he wanted to leave when he did because he didn't want to be typecast as the Doctor.
Right. Yeah, I think he said in multiple interviews that he's like, look, I did it, I left, it's done. You know, I did it. But I'm like, come on, dude.
Yeah, this
just
is so
do
huge.
It.
They might be
what is your...
convincing
your career's really
episode.
Blowing up like that, you're still getting all that buzz off of your one season appearance on Heroes. Like, come on, man. G.I. Joe, like, just do the movie. Just do the freaking special, like,
right,
because you know Tennant's in.
Oh yeah,
yeah, like 100%. And what the Paul McGann from the movie from the 90s, like, what's he's still doing radio specials, so you know he's in.
I was gonna say, I'm sure he'd love the opportunity to actually play the Doctor on film again.
Exactly. Yeah. So and if Matt Smith's, you know, the current series Doctor, there's no issue there. It's just Eccleston who's holding out.
Yeah, I really hope they get him, because that's got to be what it is, right? I mean, some reunion of the Doctors, whether it's all the live ones or whether, like, Nikki, were sort of, I think, being facetious, but, you know, some sort of manner of getting all the Doctors together.
I mean, they are not above having other actors play those Doctors.
Yeah, but that was back in the 80s when they recast Hartnell's Hartnell's character.
Mm-hmm. Didn't they have Sylvester McCoy play the sixth as well? For, like, his last appearance or something?
I
believe I believe they had him in heavy makeup just so that, because the what's it called? The guy who played, I think it's Colin something.
Colin Baker.
Colin Baker didn't want to do the regeneration scene, and so they had to have Sylvester McCoy play him for that scene.
What happened was the higher-ups at the BBC fired Colin Baker before the show was about to go into production, and he's just like, well, I'm not doing your regeneration scene. So they had to put Sylvester in a wig and put him face down, and he like got hit on the head with a box or something and regenerated.
Wow.
So that's what happened with that.
Right. I mean, yeah, I'm being a little facetious. I don't really think they're going to recast Eccleston, but what I'm hoping is that he's just playing coy and that he's just maybe trying to bury the lead and that he will come back. I think he will.
If he doesn't, I could totally see there being some definite, like, wink to the audience where, you know, like it's the three and the ninth isn't there, and then someone, you know, jokes that, you know, he must not have wanted to come or so, you know, something like that.
Yeah, he should send a transmission saying, you're on your own.
Right.
Right, exactly.
Something else, yeah.
Well, they sort of had something like that with the five doctors, where the fourth one didn't want to be involved, and they just used archival footage to explain why he wasn't there.
Yeah.
They,
he was trapped in, like, some sort of vortex or something. I don't remember what
they
it was.
They used footage from an episode that never actually made it to finished product.
Oh, there
and,
you
like,
go.
Just threw him into some weird time warp zone or something. But that was sad. I really wanted Tom Baker to be in the Five Doctors.
Well, he said, actually, in interviews that he regrets not doing it and that if given the opportunity, he would come back. So...
I'm still waiting for him to show up as some character in the new series. That'd be awesome.
I mean, they brought in, what's his name? Peter Davidson?
Mm.
He was in that what's it
time,
called?
Time Warp or something, yeah.
Time Crash. Time or Crash. The Children in Need Special.
Yep.
So, you never know. You never know. And I mean, Stephen Moffat is such a huge fan of this series that I think if given the opportunity, he would bring every Doctor, living and dead, into a serial.
Oh yeah, if it was possible, and sure. I'd love it. It'd be great.
Yeah,
it'd be probably a mess though.
Well,
yeah, of course.
Speaking of callbacks, in this episode there were, you know, three references to older characters. One of which was a very very old character, exactly the Brigadier. Yeah, who I'm not super familiar with, as not watching too much of the show, but I kind of looked into it afterwards, and the actor actually just died this year, and I guess that was sort of like their way to kind of like. Tribute or acknowledge him, you know,
That was cool. That, and it also
I was
like,
surprised
at the time of it when at the time it was played in the episode. It kind of highlighted the Doctor's like decision making, I guess, with him going, "Oh well, everyone's time has to end," kind of thing.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
Then he's like, "Oh, the Brigadier's dead," you know.
Yeah, I was surprised they didn't do the same for Sarah Jane, but maybe that, you know, they kind of already.
Actually, I was actually just watching Doctor Who videos on YouTube, and they actually did do that for her, but it was in what's that? It's that spin-off show.
Sarah Jane.
Exactly, yeah.
So okay. They actually continued on without her in the show?
Did they do, like, one more to kind of close it?
You know, now I'm mixed up. I don't know. but if you go... yeah, watch. There's videos of it on YouTube.
Go on the internet, kids. You'll figure it out.
Yeah, just do it. I'm not as familiar with the old stuff, so I shouldn't speak about things I'm not too knowledgeable about.
I remember hearing something similar. I'm sure it's something like that you'll be able to find. Mm-hmm.
But if
you're actually looking for more Brigadier, the Three Doctors special is on Netflix Instant Watch.
Oh, cool.
So it is there for those of you who are interested. Actually, a lot of the older Doctor Who episodes are on Instant Watch.
Yeah, that's something I'll probably get into in between this and, you know, the Series 7.
It's weird because I came in with in the Tenet years and then went back, and those older ones, man, the budget, you thought the budget was low in the Tenet years, like... It's kind of ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, no, like I said, as a kid, I like, vaguely remember, I would, every, like, Saturday when I was, like, 10 years old, I would go, like, stay the night at my cousin's house, and we would just play video games all night, and then, but we'd take, like, a break for, like, a half hour, or maybe an hour, and, like, to make a frozen pizza and eat it at, like, midnight, and my cousin didn't have cable, so we would just flip on PBS, and it would either be, you know, like Monty Python's Flying Circus, or it would be old episodes of Doctor Who. So, like, I remember not understanding anything about what was going on and just thinking, like, it looked like they took $20 to make this show.
Yeah, I mean, I think my least favorite was John Pertwee, because he was just an asshole. And cool. He was... He was like the karate doctor, so like he was chopping everybody.
Hi.
Yeah. Oh. And he was like 80. He was so unbelievable that he would.
He was like 56. Carl.
He looked older than 56. he had those bad British genetics that made him look way older than he was, and yeah, he was not a cool doctor.
Well, he was trapped on Earth. He was getting a bit like antsy,
I guess. But I mean, when you compare it to like. I don't remember the name of the second doc, Patrick Troughton.
Yeah, Patrick Troughton.
Yeah, who was great. I love Patrick Troughton. He's awesome in every appearance that he shows up in.
Yeah,
he's very similar to Matt Smith in a lot of ways, actually.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah,
he plays a little bit more, you know, friendly and casual on the surface, and then there's sort of a darker undercurrent. Whereas I feel like John Pertwee is just an asshole all the time. There's no undercurrent there. But yeah, there's enough of your old doctor talk.
There you go.
Who's your favorite doctor, Carl? Your favorite old doctor?
My favorite old doctor? I really do like Peter Davison a lot. I think he's great. Although I guess everyone's classic doctor is probably Tom Baker.
My favorites are number one to four, and then five's okay, and then the other two I don't really like at all.
Well, I don't think anyone likes Colin Baker. I think not that he's a bad actor or anything. I think
he just got stuck with terrible stories.
Yeah, Sylvester McCoy. You know, it was just something about his companion just really put me off. Like she was like super 80s and punk and really just annoying.
And his second companion Mel was really annoying.
Yeah. So again, I like the Doctor, but he was. Yeah, he got saddled with pretty bad companions. And then, what's his name? Paul McGann. I mean, that movie was just... It's just rough. It's a bad movie. And what's his name? Eric Roberts is the master in it, and he is awful.
Oh, like, wow.
Truly awful.
Eric Roberts is just bad in a lot of things. He was in Heroes, too, wasn't he?
So he was in Heroes. There's another connection. But, I mean, yeah. For me, I like Peter Davison a lot. I think like his stories are a lot more youthful and a lot more fun. It got a nice little boost. It got really invigorated, I feel like, when he took over. But I do feel like no matter where you live in the world, if someone says Doctor Who to you, you automatically think of Tom Baker.
Yeah.
He's ingrained in the global subconscious.
Yeah, you're right. He's the figure, like, when you think of Doctor Who, even in things that, like, have... you know, like, spoof Doctor Who. I mean, even recently I was watching an episode of Futurama, and, like, I think the TARDIS showed up at one point, like, the Doctor walked out and ran back in, and it was, I mean, it was that Doctor, you know, the scarf and everything. So, like,
He's just ingrained in the public subconscious. Like, you know, even people who don't know what Doctor Who is, if you showed them that, they'd be like, oh, yeah, I know who that is.
Yeah. That's true. I'd say, like, David Tennant's right up there now, too, is, like, being pretty recognizable as the Doctor.
I think so, yeah. I mean, David Tennant, you know, I was really psyched when they announced that Moffat was going to take over for Russell T. Davies because I think that a team-up between Tennant and Moffat would be a fantastic pairing. You know, the Moffat-written episodes for the Tennant era are the best of that era, you know. Whether you're talking about Blink or, Forest of the Damned or Silence in the Library, isn't that the two-parter? And then, what's it called? The Doctor Dances from the 9th. And then, that is a good one. And then, what was the other one? Girl in the Fireplace. That's actually a really good one too.
That is too. Yeah. It's funny that the Doctor Dances, I think, is when the show first really clicked for me. It's right in the middle of that season. And I was watching it. I mean, I enjoyed it, but you know, like I'd heard so much and everyone loved the show and I just wasn't like getting it yet. But I think that episode, well, the two-parter there, really nailed it for me when, you know, when Captain Jack's flying away he's going to sacrifice himself, and then they show up and they save him, and I think that whole emotional moment there, I was just like, okay, like, yeah, I think I'm getting it.
I know that they, you know, Captain Jack's off in Torchwood causing all sorts of ruckus and all that. But I really would love it if he would show up in Doctor Who again. I really love that character.
I think his character was the best when he was introduced. His first story, the character was the best in that story. Everything else after that, he kind of after he went to Torchwood and stuff, it just kind of started falling apart.
Yeah, I've never been able to get into Torchwood. I find it kind of schlocky, but I really enjoy him when he shows up in Doctor Who. And John Barrowman does the most flawlessly amazing American accent.
Oh, yeah.
It is unbelievable that he's not American.
I thought he was American.
He's not.
He's sure? Because I'm pretty sure I've seen him at like award shows and stuff, and he's got the accent.
No, I'm pretty sure he's Welsh, actually.
Oh.
Hold on, I'm looking it up as
we
speak.
Yeah, I was going to say pull it up. Yeah, no, his character is great, though. I would love to see him interact with the 11th Doctor here. And
He's Scottish. There you go.
There you go.
Oh, okay.
And if next season's what we think it'll be, where sort of it's, you know, episode to episode, there's new companions, then, you know, maybe there will be an episode or two with him in it.
I would love that. I mean,
it would be great.
You know, he is a Moffat-created character, technically. I guess he showed up, you know, he did show up in that episode first.
Yeah.
So it would be great, but...
Yeah, at least the face of Bo.
Well, I think the face of Bo is probably done, but I think they're pretty dead set on keeping him in Torchwood. But even so, I would love to see him in the new Who.
Yeah,
definitely.
But I guess we should probably wrap up. We could talk a lot of Doctor Who.
I could go on for many more hours.
I will say I liked David Tennant, but I always found him to be not as believable to be the Doctor. I always felt that he was an actor, and that's something I didn't get from most of the others.
I think the flaw with Tennant was perhaps that he had, like, to the extent that Amy deifies the Doctor, I felt like the Doctor almost deified people.
Mm.
That he was just like, he was a little bit too much like, you know, a fan of humanity, that it was like, it felt a little nauseating at times.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was like, you know, the psychic good vibes of Earth, you know, restored him to his youth, you know, like like that kind of stuff. That was a little bit hammy. I would, if we're going to place blame on that, though, I think that more falls on Russell T. Davies than David Tennant. I think that when you put Tennant in the hands of a good story, he shines. He really, really shines.
Yeah.
Yeah, he nails it to me. And I feel like in his seasons, you know, he was always in charge and always in command of the situation, and really like his emotional depth was always on display, and it was wonderful. Whereas I feel like in these two seasons so far, Matt Smith's Doctor is a little less like in control. You know, I feel like he doesn't always have the situations figured out right away, and there's a little bit more of you know, exploration or even just relying on his companions.
Right. Well, I think, you know, he much more exemplifies he's a madman in a box.
Yeah.
Way more than David Tennant, who is a little bit more of almost a superhero to a certain extent.
Yeah, he's really, like, infallible in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, except for the rare occasions where maybe his emotions get the best of him.
Right.
But Matt Smith's hilarious, so.
Dope, totally, yeah.
And this Doctor is just always fun. Anytime he talks, it's always funny. For the most part.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay. Well, I guess that'll do it then. Thanks a lot, Carl and Nick, for stopping by and talking a little Doctor Who. Maybe we'll have to do this again after the Christmas special.
You got it.
Or just any time we want to talk about Doctor Who. So, all right, thanks a lot, guys. All right, we'll see you next week.
See ya.
The first question, the question that must never be answered, hidden in plain sight, the question you've been running from all your life. Doctor Who.